Leading medical researchers are coming to the conclusion that marijuana, pot, grass, whatever you want to call it, is probably the most dangerous drug in the United States, and we haven't begun to find out all of the ill effects, but they are permanent ill effects.
Everybody must get stoned.
Have you seen Honey?
Colorado, Rocky Mountain High.
Yeah, because I got high. Because I got high. Because I got high. La da 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 da.
Oh,
I smoke two joints in time of peace and two in time of war. I smoke two joints before I smoke two joints and then I smoke.
I shall continue to oppose efforts to legalize marijuana.
You ever get the feeling that everything in America is completely
wild? Ladies and gentlemen, this program is for you, not your children.
It is convinced that he is hopelessly and incurably insane, a condition caused by the drug marijuana to which he was addicted.
God, you're kidding. Mom's been smoking cigarettes for years. Do you think she's not going to recognize marijuana when she sees it?
Not in a million years, unless somebody told her.
Okay, so I told
her. Toto, something tells me we're not in cartoon territory anymore.
What's that funny smell? I hate to suggest this, but my guess would be marijuana.
Hundreds and hundreds of teenage boys and girls are becoming hopeless dope addicts every year. It's fantastic.
Who taught you how to do this stuff?
You, all right? I learned it by watching you.
Do you want to introduce it, or what's the game here? What's going on?
Sure, I can introduce this. I can at least introduce me.
Okay.
Hi, everybody. This is Matt. Matt Foster is my name, and we're bringing you today Tales from the Cultural Fringe of 1999. The story of four young men who partied like it was 1999.
And the entire, like, I don't even know, maybe like quarter of a generation that partied with them for a very brief period.
And when I say we're bringing this to you, who else is bringing this to you with me?
Oh, hi, I'm Trevor T. Trujillo. I, like you, am a critic over at fanboytv.com, who also host the show notes for the Nighthawks podcast. So for a little bonus jibes and some witty rejoinders, you can check out fanboytv.com in our feed there.
Yes, we've made an interesting decision here. We've decided to, in solidarity with our brothers in the herbal remedy industry in Colorado, we've decided to do a special pseudo holiday episode for everyone's favorite pseudo holiday, 420.
Basically, folks, I'm just going to preface this right now. This is not one for the kids. We've pointed out in the past that we've kind of danced around an explicit rating on iTunes, and I think we still kind of toe that line. But as far as subject matter goes, we've never been particularly family-friendly. Language we tend to censor, but as far as topics and adult content, we're not exactly for the kids. This one, folks, is definitely not for the kids, because let's face it, we are going to be talking about things that we've all done, and things that you might not want your kids to figure out you've done until they're in high school. So
I don't know what all you're talking about, degenerate. I live in Utah.
Well, and that's what I'm going to say. I mean, we're all adults here, so let's just throw it out. Matt, I have experimented with marijuana.
What? The the gateway drug.
I'll tell you what, I had a beer long before I ever smoked pot, if you want to talk gateway drugs. But that's the political conversation we specifically said going into this episode we weren't going to have.
since you've had marijuana, how many other addictions? Like, how bad is your heroin problem?
Heroin has been in check. Never picked that one up. See, marijuana, I guess, made me so lazy that I didn't pick up the other bad drug habits.
I long ago and outside of the statute of limitations, I have partaken of a thing. I have had one marijuana before.
So yeah, I mean, folks, what we're saying is we're going to be talking about drug use, and it's something that we're familiar with. If that's a bugaboo for you, I can't believe you're still listening this far in. So, without much more beating around the bush, we're talking for 420, the unofficial stoner holiday. We're talking about half baked.
Fully, man.
Fully talking about half baked.
We look at that day as the day we met the fifth member of our crew.
Gentlemen, assume your positions.
Thurgood, Brian, Kenny, and Scarface.
Just feel like you're floating?
This weed is fantastic!
Their jobs stink.
You suck! You suck! You suck! You're cool!
Their sex life is zero.
How do I know you're not lying to me?
How do I know you got panties on, Mary Jane?
I don't.
And their lives are going nowhere.
I'm a professional meter hopper.
You have smoked yourself retarded.
Yo, who's our munchies tonight, yo?
Make sure chocolate. Gotta have chocolate.
Graham crackers.
Pizzas, man.
Celery, grape jelly.
Peanut butter.
Popcorn.
Beef jerky.
With water. Whole lot of water.
You must have been so hungry.
But now, they're in trouble.
I just gave him some candy and some chips and some pink popcorn. And
all we gotta do is raise 10% of 1 million, yo. Which by our calculations,
I was well aware of the kind of cultural influence on about, I don't know, three classes of kids. If you were in high school when Half Baked came out, it was a big deal. If you weren't in high school when Half Baked came out, it kind of fell off the radar by the time you were old enough to enjoy it. And if you were too old, it was too juvenile. So it was, our generation was kind of right in that sweet spot of about 3 or 4 years that really keyed into this movie.
Now, here's the thing that makes Half-Baked really interesting to me. Trevor and I have discussed at length, like the proverbial, you know, what movie would you have on a desert island? The problem with kind of quantifying that, we came to the conclusion is there's a great deal of difference between like the best possible film, but then there's also how lovable is a movie, how quotable is a movie. And the weird thing about Half-Baked is Half-Baked is not a good 90-minute movie in particular, but there are almost every 30 seconds of Half-Baked has a good gag in it.
And so you're getting some economy for your time.
Half-Baked was the first writing collaboration between Neil Brennan and Dave Chappelle, who would go on to do Chappelle's Show, which is almost repellently quotable. It infiltrated culture almost completely to a point to the degree that Chappelle could not go out in public and left the country for a while.
Yeah, I mean, it actually kind of, it's something that kind of backfired on him. I think it had a lot of unintended consequences. Which is unfortunate because it was a heck of a sketch comedy show. It was a really funny show, but it had kind of a weird real world influence.
Yeah, he just got where wherever he went, people would scream catchphrases from it at him, and the famous one being the Rick James sketch. And he said I gotta leave for a while, man. People are yelling I'm Rick James bitch at me when I'm out with my kids. And in the short form writing in this, you see the beginning of what would kind of crystallize into their collaboration. Like it has one of what is flat out one of my favorite lines of comedy dialogue, one of my favorite exchanges ever, which is Thurgood, the main character. He works as a janitor in a medical lab that works on medical marijuana, and that's how so much of the marijuana is attained over the course of the plot. But at one point, one of the guys in the lab says to him,
Janitor? Janitor?
Sorry about that. What is it, scientist?
Could you, I know this isn't your responsibility, but
Would you be a dear and run this down to the supply department for me? It's on the second floor.
Just run this down?
Yes, but make sure you bring the order right back to me. I need it ASAP.
Gotcha. Hey, I know this isn't your responsibility, but just mop the rest of the shit up. I'll be right back.
It just totally sets the movie up as like we're attempting smart, dumb comedy. And it just has this sort of not in an obtrusive or obnoxious way, but it just says, hey, we are going to talk a little bit about race and class here, but we're not going to make a big thing out of it.
Yeah. This is a movie that very successfully knew exactly what audience to key into and how to write to that audience, because this is a stoner movie for stoners. It is by stoners, about stoners, full of humor that really only stoners are gonna get, and that you have to be a little inebriated to really think is all that funny. But when you are inebriated, is very funny.
Well, and with one small exception, this is kind of a weird callback to the Fear and Loathing episode we did. The actual visual depiction of being high in this is very weak in execution. Like it's very silly and not very not realistic and not, you know, whereas in Fear and Loathing it was obvious, like I think they bought the cinematographer something and told him to replicate the look and feel.
Yeah, there's I think a scene of really kind of shoddy, and I think it's shoddy intentionally, wire work. The guys smoke this really great pot that they got from the medical lab and begin levitating, and you can actually see where the strings are like pulling on their clothing. And you can see the faint green line around, you know, Dave Chappelle's outfit as they're flying in front of a green screen.
What's interesting to me about this is an interesting assembled cast. It's one of those movies where a constellation of people were at very formative points in their career. You had a sort of an assortment of people working very cheap on a passion project that went on to have careers.
Yeah, we mentioned Dave Chappelle, probably the biggest breakout of this cast, but it's also got a galaxy of cameos.
And the quick version of the plot is very simple. One of them gets picked up by the police, and they make a decision to deal drugs, to steal weed from Thurgood's medical job, from the medical weed laboratory, and sell it to get their friend out of jail. And the other roommates are Kenny, played by Harlan Williams. And then we have Jim Brewer. And Harlan Williams and Jim Brewer both went on to become, headlining stand-up comedians. So they did all right for themselves. And then the other roommate is Scarface, played by Guillermo Diaz. What's really funny about that is Scarface in Half-Baked is a wimp. He's a Cuban fast food guy. Like, I believe he works at a not Burger King. And he's a fast food clerk that idolizes Scarface, you know, the Pacino movie. And in his later career, he did like four seasons on Weeds as an extremely scary, like Gus Fring intensity drug dealer. so he sort of closed out his career recently with the playing the character he wanted to be in Half-Baked, which is kind of a funny closed loop. And then we have some cool bit players and cameos, like the boys have an anonymous couch surfing fifth Beatle, who is the immortal Stephen Wright, and who just with every little, and he barely speaks, but
he's passed out on the couch
song
for the whole movie. They don't know how he got there. They just kind of wake up one morning after being very, very stoned, and this guy is passed out on the couch, and they refer to him as the guy, like it's a proper noun.
Yeah, the guy on the couch, and they even, to his face, they call him the guy. Like, hey, the guy, you have to check this out. Yeah. And that's another thing. It's another thing I like here is their sort of personal language and idiom, and they're like, their deeply ingrained pot smoking ritual, and they have a few little verbal tics that just really make them sound like a bunch of guys that have been roommates for a while. you know, the chemistry between them is pretty believable.
I do have to say, then, though, my biggest complaint with this movie, the part of this movie that just absolutely does not work for me, has always been Jim Brewer. And Jim Brewer is kind of famous for this character. I mean, this was, as far as his acting career goes, kind of his apex.
Well, and this character is Jim Brewer's stand-up persona.
Yeah.
Who's kind of a...
And it strikes me, and maybe I'm being a hipster about it, I don't know, but... As much as I know, Jim Brewer is kind of a big stoner. At least that's what I hear about the guy. His character in this movie almost hams it up too much. They almost lay it on a little too thick. And he becomes the caricature that everybody has of a stoner who's never actually smoked pot. You know, it's like if you were to get one of those real vanilla kids who came into the college theater department out of a Midwestern real apple polished town and ask them to play the stoner character in the next student production of Hair. This is the kind of performance you're going to get. The real stereotypical, yeah, man, party. And it's not even to a Jeff Lebowski, the dude. I mean, that is probably the most realistic kind of California stoner I've ever seen. Jim Brewer I've never actually met that guy before. I've never met a guy who's that spaced out, you know?
There's a couple other things that I think are interesting about this as a sort of time and place recollection. First off, there's several issues in this plot that make it, you know, they very patently do not have cell phones. And in 1999, when this came out, you could get a cell phone, but they were very expensive, and nobody in the movie has one. It's an entire movie with not nary a single cell phone, and that's always weird because, like, a movie exactly a year or two later would be full of them. And then, because that was right around the time they blew up. Because I remember I was in college in 1999, and it was still a big deal to have a cordless phone.
Yeah.
So you could walk around, you could take your phone out to the dorm lobby with you, and then maybe literally 6 months to a year later, people started getting... Cell phones just sort of abruptly became affordable and people started really getting them a lot. The other thing that got me is how apolitical this movie is. Like it's really divorced of any commentary on pot legalization. It's set for sort of the, there is a theme explored throughout of the idea that marijuana is not that severe and should not be not send people to jail. But it's just, there's not a lot of heavy-handed political stuff in it. And there's so much, it also depicts a pre-9/11 New York. You know, no checkpoints, no TSA, no subway guards, no cameras.
Yeah.
And like when the boys perpetrate their quote-unquote brilliant scam to deal weed, they use their landline phone number, and, you know.
Well, and I love that their plan is they roll about, you know, 250 joints, staple them to the back of business cards, and just hand out the cards as party favors.
Well, and what's really funny, did you ever watch High Maintenance? High Maintenance is a Vimeo Direct web show, and I believe you have to buy it by the episode. I haven't watched it in a while, so I don't remember, but High Maintenance is about this guy... He is a New York City bike messenger that delivers weed by bike. His little delivery company is called Maintenance. Like, he just answers the phone, Maintenance. It's a serious take on the empty pipes gag from when the bike messenger shows up in Half Baked.
Yeah.
and what it actually is it's an anthology story because he delivers the person's weed and then it ceases to follow him and stays with the person while they smoke up and interact with whoever else is in their apartment.
Yeah.
So it's very much like a New York anthology, and it's actually really good. But again, you see, and it has a bunch of the same people in it, like Laura Silverman, who plays the Jan, the Jim Brewer's fellow record store clerk, and a few other people that are Neil Brennan himself is, I believe, in a couple high maintenances. And so you see, it's very weird because this is a cluster of people, and I think that a lot of them were stand-up comedians together. And the idea that they all collaborated and this unremarkable movie that did not sit well with the critics at all was where all this talent first came together, and they kind of took a dry run at things they would then sort of separate out.
Well, and I have to say, again, with the exception of Jim Brewer, a lot of the people who did go on and did have careers had careers doing stuff that was a lot less superficial than this. I mean, the Chappelle Show, for as funny as it was, as quotable and lovable as it was, didn't shy away from some social commentary.
Well, and it's weird because it's a lot of the same talent, so it's almost like... it's almost like biting down harder was what was missing from Half-Baked.
And I think it is, because I think at the time they made it for the stoners of our generation, yours and mine, because the stereotype at the time was that if you smoke weed, you were an idiot. You know, that was the thought, that was the propaganda, is that you smoked yourself stupid and you couldn't function on a high level, so they made a lowbrow movie to kind of cater to that. And we were too dumb to know any different at the time anyway, so we bought it hook, line, and sinker.
Well, another thing that's interesting about this is, together with American Pie and a few other drops right around this time, like when did maybe Dazed and Confused come out? But this is one of the tail end of the late night comedy genre being big and getting big theatrical releases.
Yeah, I mean, around this time you had, as you mentioned, American Pie. You had Road Trip was kind of a latecomer in there, too. Harold and Kumar, which is another one that's a heavy pot-themed movie that I think has a little more weight to it, both in the comedy category and the intelligence category.
I think I would say the nail in the coffin of the late-night movie genre, not that it necessarily was terrible in and of itself, but... I think the right bookend on that would be Van Wilder, which I think was 2002.
Yeah, roundabout, which was the ostensible birth of Ryan Reynolds in the public oeuvre.
Yeah, as the much more photogenic version of the real life Bert Kreischer, who is another stand up colleague of Chappelle and these guys from this kind of generation of comics. So it's a weird little nexus of things getting made by a bunch of people intersecting on each other's projects. And I just find that stuff kind of fascinating. And it's one of those, when we sit around playing Six Degrees and we kind of look at who made what when, you start to see almost a roadmap of, oh, he did this for him, and then he did this for him. And... You know, like what's the guy say? Is it Clerks? He says sometimes you got to make, or Dogma. Sometimes you got to make the paying back your friends movie, and then sometimes you got to make Reindeer Games.
Oh yeah, that was in Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, just the.
So what about Half Break? I mean, this is to be perfectly honest, this is not one that has been in my repertoire on heavy repeat. What kind of keeps you coming back from time to time? This was your idea for an episode. Is it much more just, I mean, obviously there's grist for discussion here, but do you enjoy it on some kind of simplistic level?
I wouldn't even say I enjoy it on a simplistic level. I mean, there's a lot of unironic quality here. There's a lot of delivery here that is wonderful, particularly right out of the mouth of Dave Chappelle, and a lot of his love interest is a girl named Mary Jane, and just some of the, what's your name? Mary Jane? Really? just some of the, just his inflection and his, and there's an underlying smartness to it where, like I said, some of the, like, Jander, yes, scientist, some of that. And there is also a sense that these are good guys and that this is maybe kind of temporary and that they're of an age where it's about to end. And that's kind of what the end of the movie's about. it's one of those movies, like, you're probably never going to go buy a copy of Half Baked, but it's one of those ones that if it comes on, a lot of time, if you hit it in the middle on cable, you'll finish watching it. Because the ending of it deserves special mention. They run afoul of Samson, who is a kind of a he's a very
he's a blaxploitation inspired crime lord, you know, something out of a Shaft or a Dolomite.
And he's kind of weird because he's effeminate, but he's not. He's kind of a the 70s vernacular would be he's kind of a cat daddy, kind of pimpish black guy. Like a pimp in the pimps up, hose down fashion sense, not a literal pimp. Although I guess it's sort of implied that he is.
Yeah.
But it was a little probably too dark for the movie. But he's this he wears a powdered wig and he velour suits and he's very very effeminate, and some of their interactions with him, because it's also refreshing because they don't try to front very hard, and they actually seem to sort of be aware of the limits of their reach, because like they try to run kind of a con job on Samson, and he looks at him and just goes, "Shut up." And he goes, "Oh, Mr. Samson, we are sorry. We are terrified right now. Yeah. We made him. I lied to you, and I am sorry." Yeah. just completely.
It's funny if you just want to kick it on and have some really dumb laughs about 30 seconds at a time. The overarching movie does not make sense. There's no real story here. There's no driving force. It's just a loose assortment of events that kind of loosely tie together. And even the drug vignettes aren't necessarily all that druggy. It's just, you know, drugged out people dealing with really absurd situations.
The other thing that goes on here is this is a successful parade of likable cameos. Like, there's so many. When they're dealing drugs, they meet a bunch of different types of smoker that are not actually even named in the script. They're called by the, like, one of them is the scavenger smoker, and that's Snoop Dogg.
Yes. It's like they talk. Yeah, they talk about, he's that dude that's going to show up when you light up a joint. That just shows up out of nowhere, and they literally have like Snoop Dogg on an elevator behind some boxes, just kind of rose up from the ether, climb over the railing and hang out with the guys, smoke their entire joint and then leave.
Yeah, they like lift him. They lift him up on a dumbwaiter, and he steps out of the shadows that he never walked into. Like just like they summoned him with an incantation. And then you have John Stewart as the white enhancement smoker who wants to do everything he would normally do, but on weed. Which the funniest thing about that is that it went on to be a running joke for many, many years on The Daily Show.
Yeah, yeah.
which and now there's a generation of people that maybe have never seen Half Baked
that know that joke.
But they would watch it and go, "Oh, that's the joke from The Daily." Oh, that's the guy from The Daily Show when he was like 12.
He's what we call an enhancement smoker because he thinks that marijuana makes every activity that much better.
Mikasa Tsukasa.
Observe.
You're Scarface, right?
Yeah.
I love Al Pacino, man. Did you ever see Scent of a Woman?
Yup.
Have you ever seen Scent of a Woman on weed? That's the way to say it, man. It's just whack.
$60, yo.
That's cool, man. I got it. Did you ever see the back of a $20 bill, man?
Nah, I don't know, yo.
Did you ever see the back of a $20 bill on weed?
What I loved is I want to give special mention to Willie Nelson. Lives in Austin, is awesome, is super talented, just lost his friend Merle Haggard a couple weeks ago. We want to kind of tip our hats to Merle, and I think we'll have a special way of doing that at the end of the episode. But I want to smoke weed with Willie Nelson.
Then there's a You Should Have Been There smoker. They love talking about the old days, back when weed was grass.
Hell, back in the 60s, I was smoking on the street. Cops didn't say nothing. Hell, he's getting high, too. Everybody was good.
Oh, it wasn't a thing to do because it was a thing to do, you know. It was a thing to do because it got you high. Can you dig it?
I feel you. Nah, that's why I'm doing it. I feel it. Yeah. Man, you're cool as sister. I hate to do it, but I got to charge you. That's 60 bucks.
60 bucks?
Yeah.
Man, I remember when a dime bag cost a dime. You know what I mean?
I don't know, man. There are people that say they'll never smoke weed with Willie again.
That would be a fitting way to go out, I think.
Now we learned a hard lesson in a small Texas town. He fired up a fat boy and he passed him around. And the last words I spoke before they took me in. I may discount bungee jump, but I'll never smoke weed with Willie again.
But it's just one of those things that, you know, it's unpleasant to talk about, but Willie not going to be with us forever. And God, I hope that fate puts us on a cross path. You know, I've had the ability to hold court with a few notable filmmakers and personalities. It may shock you to realize that Doug Benson smokes weed, but I've seen it happen. And so I'd love to have Willie just kind of added into that list. He doesn't have to talk to me. He doesn't have to acknowledge me, just as long as we're in the room together. It would be awesome if he talked to me, but it's not required. I want to witness this.
That's another thing worth mentioning. Speaking of the roots of the Chappelle Show, we have in Half Baked, Dave Chappelle plays a dual role.
Oh, that's right.
He is Thurgood. And he is also the rapper that endorses their weed on the radio and on the cable access show and gives them local credibility. And his name is Sir Smoke-a-Lot. Real name, Cecil. But
who is a dead ringer for Rick James in the Chappelle Show.
Well, yeah, he's not. It's not quite germinated, but you see the sort of very early kind of roots of what will become the Rick James caricature.
But ultimately, you know, I think what's fun to talk about here is its history and is kind of its place in the evolution. Because, I mean, movies would come along later on that I think treated the subject matter better and with a little more grace and a little more gravitas. A close contemporary that came out actually a little bit beforehand was The Big Lebowski, which when it came out was not the huge juggernaut that it is. It kind of took a while on home video to kind of come to fruition and for people to discover it. But I think treats that kind of California lazy stoner character into something a little more realistic and a little more believable. And, you know, obviously The Big Lebowski has a huge cult following now because not only was that character in there and was that character well-treated, but it also wasn't the hyper-microscopic focus of the movie. Was, this guy smokes a lot of weed. No, he's a guy who smokes a lot of weed who's in an interesting scenario. What if we took out Humphrey Bogart from The Big Sleep and put in Jeff Glabowski, you know?
There is, I think, a problem with people denying weed as an intoxicant. Because it's not really like, it's certainly good for certain medical needs, but generally speaking, like to paraphrase Dennis Leary, it's not full of vitamin C.
Right.
You know, and I think this, in its own way, it has a little honesty about Arrested Development here. And you could certainly argue that the Arrested Development begots the weed smoking and not the other way around. Begat. But it's an interesting little discussion. And another thing worth mentioning is the sense of place factor, because it is pivotal, that his first date with Thurgood's first date with Mary Jane is he takes her for a walk because he's broke and they do this.
The $8 date is hysterical. I love that whole sequence.
But they run the total of the money in his pockets on the thing where he tries to get a full date for $8 in his pocket. New York is just so busy and walking around New York, just walking around the street there is very much a thing. And like, we see that later in Seinfeld, and then we see it in Broad City, and we see it in the bookend sequences in Louie.
Before I had seen Half-Baked, I always assumed it took place in California. I mean, how much more stereotypical can you get than California stoners? Especially with somebody like Jim Brewer, you know, who is the very tie-dyed sandals, old jeans that you've been wearing for 9 days straight type of hippie. It's New York, but it's not a stereotypical New York. This is a New York in broad daylight. Where all of this is happening, which I think was kind of nice and refreshing, and I think took the edge off the drug issue, if you will, because it's like, no, this is safe, this is friendly, this is something that they can do and not be hurt.
There is a sort of understated running gag in Half-Baked that a lot of the square people also smoke weed.
Yeah.
Like, the cops that they work with late in the movie clearly smoke the weed themselves, as does one or more of the scientists and a few other people they run into.
Yeah,
like not all of their customers are particularly eccentric. Like at one point, they kind of one of the list of smokers is what he calls the after school special, which is a kid who's trying to be edgy.
Yeah,
and then the other one is the
super cool dad in his 40s or something like that.
Yeah, and then they pull the camera out, and you see they live in the same. It's the father and son. They live in the same apartment.
And they even go so far as to say,
"Yeah."
They even go so far as to say that the father is desperately looking for a way to bond with his son, and they both kind of light up at the same time.
This also has some just ridiculous flights of stoner digression, and I will say, I agree Jim Brewer is weak in it, but he does two of the best things in it, which are his rant when he quits his job. I'm not going to do what you all think I'm going to do. And then the funeral they have for poor Killer the dog. Which, on a Fantastic Fest related note, this does have a dead dog in it.
Yeah, yeah.
Despite being rather lighthearted on the whole. But
so I think we're about up against our time limit here, but Matt, any final thoughts on Half-Baked?
We got to talk one more cameo. We got to talk about the man who defends Harlan Williams' Kenny character in prison.
yes, absolutely.
It was this incredible flight of fancies that went on. Harlan Williams is put in the proverbial box in prison, and obviously, comedy writing being what it is, a large, powerful inmate fancies his virtue, so to speak, and who steps in to save him at the last moment is, and this had to be like, you want to talk about something where they were obviously actually high in the writer's room. it is a character called the Squirrel Master, and Squirrel Master is he's Tommy Chong. Tommy Chong is a scruffy prison karate master, and then he has a pet squirrel at, like the guys in the Green Mile, that lives in his coat, who he calls Fuzzy Nuts. and the bizarre gravitas of it, and the accurate, here's what I like about Half-Baked, actually. Here's a major pillar in support of the movie, is it the backgrounding on it, like there's a sort of veritas to it, and they like, just like having the blaxploitation bad guy, you have this guy who is like, if you were alive at that place in time, the you would go to like a newsstand and you would buy something like a Maxim or a Black Belt magazine, and it would have all these ads for things like self-defense DVDs that were put together by these guys who looked like the Squirrel Master, that were these edgy karate masters that were very much wanted to be the bad guy in Karate Kid. and they would advertise, like there were a lot of ads for cheap action movies and stuff in the back of comics, and this guy would, and it's like this alignment of tropes where they very accurately nailed a bunch of weird cultural factors all at once and preserved them in amber in this one dopey cameo. also it's just Tommy Chong, and it's fairly he's always pretty good.
Dopey cameo. I see what you did there.
Oh, that was actually wholly unintentional. it's pretty cool, man. But the truth is, I don't want to lead our audience astray. Watch Half-Baked on cable, or it's on Netflix right now. I don't think you should lay out a bunch of dough for Half-Baked that you could spend on, say, Cherry Garcia.
But I think it's a perfectly appropriate holiday movie. It's definitely it's a party watcher for sure. You talked about having party docs. I've been to more than one party where this movie has been going on in the background because it is good in those 30-second increments, and it's a good placeholder on the television that you can have so somebody doesn't turn something stupid on, you know?
Well, and speaking of our occasional drum we beat about the pre-internet dissemination of information, this was one of the first, you know, probably maybe along with The Simpsons, this is one of those first things that got really chopped up and used in throwaway little bits. Like, this is one of the first things where people felt just directly quoting this movie was an appropriate, or Monty Python was probably the prototype. But that method of expression where you just sort of explicitly and directly quote from something, a lot of people fall prey to in high school.
Oh, yeah. I was quoting this long before I ever saw it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there are some lines in here that, once again, if you were in high school, like, between, say, like, 95 and 99, you're going to find some stuff in here that you recognize. You know, the Jamaican scene, the infamous Bob Saget cameo, which I don't even think we can get away with playing on air. All right, so yeah, for me, it's there. It is what it is, and it succeeds at being what it is. So you really can't knock it for falling short of its goals. It is a stoner comedy for stoners by stoners. It's not the best example of that kind of comedy. Either before or since. I think maybe Cheech and Chong did it a little better back then. I think Harold and Kumar did it a little bit better up the road, you know, a couple months or a couple years.
Yeah. And a flaw, I thought, here, there's a line between sort of homage and maybe overly borrowing, and like... the cops in this are an awful lot like the cops in Nice Dreams.
Yeah, yeah.
And to the point that they really straddle that line.
So, yeah, we just thought we'd throw this kind of little quickie episode together for the 420 holiday for the stoners among our listeners. If you're not a stoner, thanks for sticking with us. We sure do appreciate it. But I don't know, Matt, I'm feeling coffee and pie.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's time to get a little dessert.
Well, in that case, ladies and gentlemen, find us on Facebook, Nighthawks Podcast, on Twitter, at Nighthawks Pod. We are also over at fanboytv.com, where you can find the show notes for this and many other episodes, as well as reviews written by Matt and myself. And also wanted to throw a shout out to iTunes, where you can find us. You can subscribe to us. That's a big help. You can give us a rating. That helps. Write a review. That also helps. We're really going to start pushing to try and... I think this podcast is officially a thing, and it's just now a matter of time for us to make it more of a thing. And you can certainly help us doing that by subscribing, rating, and reviewing.
And if you tell two friends, and they tell two friends, and they tell two friends, and they tell two friends,
and so on, and so on, and so on.
That's like 256 friends.
All right, Matt. Well, I think we're going to sign off.
Because it's almost morning. Morning?
That. I'm
Stay classy,
that.
San Diego.
whether you like it or not. The best I can tell, the world's gone to hell, and we're sure gonna miss it a lot. All of the whiskey in Lynchburg, Tennessee, stood and hit the spot. I got $100 bill, friend, you keep your pills, cause it's all the weather pot. That cackle babble head in the box must think I'm dumb as a rock. Reading me the news while I'm kicking off my shoes, and it's scaring me out of my socks. Admitted a stranger I'm not, but buddy, let me tell you what. If you ask old Will to say, here's the deal, friends, it's all going on. Well,